everybody. It's time for another episode of the CCHA show. Perilous Garris here with Jack Hittinger, who covers the CCHA for USCHO. And Jack, thanks for coming on again. I know we had a good discussion last time you were here, so it's obviously an important time to be talking CCHA hockey.
Yeah, we're getting into the last couple weeks of the season here, and I actually wrote this in my column this week. Just it seems like it's always coming down to the last 2 weeks of the season here, almost always historically. So, really a good time for discussions about this sort of thing.
Yeah, and to start things off, we'll get to the weekend that was, and a couple teams were off, Lake Superior State and Minnesota State not playing this weekend. Lake Superior State obviously not having the season they wanted, but they've actually played decently in the second half and could, provide some kind of a spoiler, mentality or something like something along those lines. What do you think about Lake State, who did not play last weekend?
I can't even remember who they played the week before that. Let me bring it up real quick.
Oh, they split with Northern, yeah.
Split with Northern, and they split with Bemidji. So they split with Harris. They've actually, like you said, they've been playing pretty well since 2023. I mean, relative to how they were playing before.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I think I talked to Damon Whitten a couple weeks ago, and he was basically saying the same thing, just like, they seemed like they had a lot of injuries, and maybe they weren't playing some guys where they should be playing, so they sort of reorganized some things, and it's made them better on the ice, and the locker room has been a bit better. So I don't know. I feel like when you're in the midst of one of those rough seasons, it can be difficult because, I don't know, maybe guys think they should be playing more or playing somewhere different. So obviously those things happen with every team, but it seems like they get exacerbated when you're not playing like you should think you're playing. So I know that's always like a tough thing to navigate for a team, but it seems like, especially lately, they've been doing it pretty well.
Absolutely. And then their team that was off was Minnesota State. They stuck at 13th in the polls, which makes sense. Both they and Michigan Tech are on the pairwise bubble, which we'll talk about in the second half of the show. But the Mavericks, they're kind of in good position to win another McNaughton Cup, which maybe some people didn't think in the first half. But again, just your thoughts overall on the Mavs since the last time I saw you, which is quite a bit of time ago, but they've definitely been playing better hockey in the second half of the season.
Yeah, something like, or they've got a little win streak going here, don't they?
They had won 10 in a row up until
St. Thomas.
Yep, up into St. Thomas, yeah.
So, yeah, that Bemidji series, obviously they got swept. Sort of went into the break probably a little angry. That's what it seemed like from some of the interviews and things that I was seeing with my case things. It was good for them to get that decompression and come back, and they've been almost unbeatable since then. And now, like we talked about, it's looking like they're 2 points behind Michigan Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And they have two games in hand, and Tech is off this week, so
yeah,
it's definitely gonna come down to the wire no matter what happens this weekend. I'm sure we'll talk about that later, but
yeah,
I think, I don't know if anyone thought that the Mavericks were out of it because
no.
They were doing, but I think maybe you looked at Bemidji was on top going into the break and they were playing really well. Bowling Green is playing pretty well. Both of them have fallen off and it's kind of become a two-team race. I think maybe we shouldn't have counted the Mavericks out so soon because obviously we know they have the potential to turn it on. And I guess as far as you mentioned the polls, I've been voting for them consistently, yeah. Top 10. I think this week I had Tech is 8 and Mavs is 9, just because Tech has the better record against them head to head, but I don't see that much separation between them.
Definitely not. And I think I had both in the inside or right around the same spot in my poll. So getting to the weekend, the games that were actually played here, we had a split between Northern Michigan and St. Thomas with Benny Halas, the freshman goaltender for the Wildcats, picking up his second career shutout on Friday, 3-0. Tommy's bounced back, picking up a 4-2 win. That was a close game late. That could have gone either way. But we've seen St. Thomas do this on a number of occasions this year, winning games late, which they weren't doing certainly last year. And in the first half of the year, they lost a number of one-goal games. So not necessarily a turning point for St. Thomas because they still split. But, you know, from their point of view, I think, and Coach Blasi, I think he has to be happy with the weekend overall, although they were shut out on Friday.
Yeah, and that's something he was talking about this week in his press conference too, just about how close their games have been. I can't remember what he said, but something like 24 out of 30 games or whatever, they've been within a goal.
Yep.
Without empty netters or whatever. Which is a pretty wild stat considering where they were last year. And I know he also sort of, I don't want to say he distances himself from last year's team, but it's sort of a whole different team just when you look at how many newcomers they have.
Right.
So I think obviously they are a team that is going to be pretty good down the line, like we said. And I don't think anybody is going to want to play them in the first round, just because they're sort of a wild card team a little bit, because they have just so many scoring options. And they, like we said, they've been playing everybody pretty close, no matter who it is. I don't think they've really been blown out very much this season. I think they're going to be a pretty tough out for anybody.
Yeah, they've beaten, you know, Bowling Green. They've beaten Minnesota State on the road. Tech, they had the loss in Houghton. Yeah, certainly can't count them out. No, Northern, on the other hand, kind of found themselves on Friday, but weren't able to seal the deal on Saturday. And they're probably a little disappointed they weren't able to get the sweep there, because it really kind of damaged their chances of getting a home ice, which is still very much up in the air. For our next series here, which is teams that actually played each other battling for that fourth spot, and they're the closest to it. Ferris State beating Bemidji State 3-2 on Friday, but in a big way. Again, here we see a team bounce back in the second. Actually, we had all splits here last weekend, with Bemidji State winning 6-2 on Saturday. And I know the Beavers are a team you follow rather closely. What was your take on that series?
Yeah, well, just getting back to the splits, I mean, I think at least the Bemidji, Ferris, and Tech Northern series, you both sort of expected splits. For me, that's sort of what I was expecting, just because of all the teams that played historically. Maybe the Tech one, we don't, but we'll talk about them in a minute. I don't know. That first game especially seemed like a sort of typical Bob Daniels, Tom Cerutori battle. Maybe a little more high scoring than a normal Cerutori battle, but I definitely remember a couple 1-0 games between the two historically. But yeah, it seemed like looking at the box score and stuff, it seemed like it was pretty even game for most of the game until the third period there. I think Ferris got a couple two quick goals, maybe. Maybe one was kind of fluky. I don't remember exactly how it went, but the first game, just like I said, typical matchup between these two. And then the next night, I was almost kind of surprised that the Beavers were able to come out so quickly and score 6, just because you would figure it would be another sort of low scoring game. But
right.
I think the Beavers outshot them 29-21 in that second game. Got a couple power play goals. Were able to kill off a bunch of penalties. So it's one of those things where you kind of were expecting a split just because of where they are in the standings, and they're both sort of 500 teams, and I don't know, nothing is really decided at all. So
no,
they kind of left the same way that they entered, which, like I said, was not a big surprise for me. But I don't know if you saw anything in that series that stood out more than me, but
no, I think it was, those are two teams that are, they're in that in where they are in the standings for a reason, right? They've had, you know, haven't quite been able to put together full weekends, either of them, so much, except for maybe Ferris State at Minnesota State when they were able to take two there. But other than that, it's been a lot of splits and a lot of, you know, you feel a really good one night or bounce back. I know Ferris had a couple of series where they were, you know, did not like their Friday performance, but then came back in a big way on Saturday. So it's a bit of a reverse for them. They've gotten great goaltending from Noah Giesbrecht, who's, you know, he's really kept them in games a lot like Blake Piatela for Tech in our next series, in our final series of the weekend. With Bowling Green jumping out early on the Huskies on Friday, they win 5-2 eventually. Michigan Tech finding itself in an unfamiliar place, playing from behind. They weren't able to come all the way back. Kyle Kukkonen, the forward of the week in the league, had two goals in each game. He had both goals on Friday, and then he helped the Huskies. They were down 1-0 early on Saturday again, but Kukkonen had the tying goal. He eventually had the goal that wrapped it up, an empty netter, and a 4-2 Michigan Tech win. And I just want to point out, before I get to your thoughts on that series, was that how crucial the Saturday game became for Michigan Tech and their hopes for having a shot at the McNaughton Cup. If they get swept there, it's basically over for them as far as McNaughton, and Minnesota State would have been able to potentially clinch it this coming weekend. We'll get to that in the second half of the show against Bemidji, but a huge win for Tech at home on their Carnival weekend. What were we thinking coming out of that weekend with a split for Tech and for Bowling Green?
Yeah, I saw that first score on Friday, and I was really surprised just because of sort of the way the two teams have been trending. And obviously, Winter Carnival is big for Tech. I feel like I don't know what the numbers are, but it seems like they usually do pretty well on
yeah. Winter Carnival,
especially in that first game. I know that I feel like the second game is usually the weird one because it's usually like in the middle of the afternoon. They started at 3 p.m. or something like that. It's usually kind of a weird game, but that
like
first
a 5 o'clock start, yeah.
Yeah, that really surprised me, and especially because I don't think Swankler scored any of those goals, which is kind of surprising. I don't know if he played. Maybe
he had one on Saturday. He had the first goal of the game on Saturday, but yeah, he was they held him in check a little bit, but yeah. He still got to, I think it was his 40th point on the year, and we'll get to our Hobie top 10 talk in a little bit later. But anytime you can keep him from putting up a lot of points in a weekend, you're gonna have decent success.
But I mean, another thing too, just on that Friday, it also broke Pietola's streak of Friday shutouts, which I think,
yeah,
I mean, maybe not anything significant, but I thought that was kind of a cool stat that he was just getting shutouts on Friday. But
it was four in a row, I think.
BG maybe showed that he's not invincible on Fridays, so that was for other teams around the league and around the country. But I don't know. Obviously, Bowling Green does have guys that can score. Even besides Swankler, and they've been in some high scoring games, so we should have known that they can score. But sometimes, usually they're getting outscored because their defense hasn't been great. So it was good for them to have a good defensive performance on that Friday and get a win. And obviously, like you said, Tech kept their chances up of the McDonald Saturday. I'm sure that they knew going in the locker room after that game on Friday that they needed to win on Saturday. I'm sure that's something Coach Shahan said that they needed to do to win Carnival, or I don't know if they won Carnival, but to win the game and put on a good showing in front of their home fans.
Yeah, they actually did not. Bowling Green won on goal difference by one, I believe, in the end of things, because they scored by one goal, 5-2, or was it 7-6? Just a fun little sidebar there for Carnival. But Jack and I are going to take a quick break and be back. I had a chance to have a really good conversation with Kevin Weissman, the athletic director at Minnesota State. You'll hear that in just a moment here on the CCHA show.
Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Jake Gensel.
Gensel banks it towards the goal. He scores.
Kale McCarr.
He scores.
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness gracious me.
Visit collegehockeyinc.com and follow at College Hockey.
All right, joining me now on the CCHA show is Kevin Weissman, athletic director at Minnesota State. He's been there for a little over 20 years now. And Kevin, thanks for taking a few minutes to jump on the show.
Absolutely. Look forward to the conversation.
Before Kevin took over, he was athletic director, associate AD at his alma mater in Northern Iowa, where he played football as well. What did that whole experience from being a player, you know, being a college athlete, to then working at your alma mater, also teaching, taught some finance in the business school there. What did that do for you as a young adult?
I really kind of think it sets the stage for my career path. I was at a point as an undergraduate finishing up my degree, kind of that penultimate moment of what do I do now? And, I really felt at the time I was looking for something that would kind of be the marriage of that passion for sport and athletics and my academic background in business and finance. And, right now there's sport administration, sport management. That wasn't really so much in vogue at the time as I was finishing up as an undergraduate in 1987. And I really felt, athletics was heading in a direction that it was going to be more about big business. People in my chair 25, 30 years ago were mostly former coaches. And that was an important experience in terms of mentoring the coaches. But I really felt it was headed in a different direction where there was going to be a little bit more emphasis on business and administration. So I stuck at Northern Iowa, decided to give myself a chance at a master's in business administration. That was going to be my exit strategy if things didn't work out in athletic administration. And here we are, more than 30 years later, and I haven't had to exercise that exit strategy.
That's pretty cool. Getting a little bit into your family, your two daughters, one of them, I think, just finished up playing soccer at the U of M. What was that experience like? Just, I'm sure both of them played some various sports growing up, and getting a chance to either watch them develop as young adults too.
Yeah, both of the girls are up in the Twin Cities. Alyssa is a nurse up there, and McKenna has just started her professional career with Blue Cross Blue Shield, but both former high school athletes. McKenna had a great opportunity to pursue that at the intercollegiate level. And as you mentioned, just finished up her career with the Minnesota Gophers. It's interesting to be on the other side of the table, so to speak. There's often times when I get a chance to meet recruits and prospective student athletes coming onto campus and sit across the table from mom and dad and the student athlete. And, before McKenna had gone through the recruiting experience, I used to say, I know exactly what you're going through here. And literally and figuratively, after McKenna went through that experience, it really made it, more realistic to say, I know exactly what you're going through. And I could really honestly then speak from both perspectives as a recruiter and the recruited and really understand both perspectives a little more clearly. And it was a great experience to follow her career. But it's different, being a parent and enjoying it from that perspective versus, overseeing it as an administrator and working with all of our coaches and student athletes on a daily basis.
Got to be tough a little bit to try to get to some of those games and maybe get up to the Twin Cities to watch. They have a great setup there for the Gophers women do at that field they have. But what was that experience like traveling around trying to see her while you're still obviously an athletic director and have your responsibilities there?
Yeah, it was, I've got a very forgiving administration here at the university and a very caring staff. And I think really, the sentiment was some of those experiences with your daughter are once in a lifetime. There's always going to be another MSU football match or football game or soccer match or hockey game to get to. You'll never get back that time with your daughter. And so I really did kind of immerse myself and commit to it full time. It got to be pretty hectic, but we've got a very caring and talented staff here that was able to, cover for my absence and carry on it was a great experience, and I'm glad that I was able to do those things and get around and see her matches and travel the country. And it really gives you, you know, a different perspective on, you know, kind of your professional why. You know, I saw some of the highs and lows and really kind of focused on some of those accomplishments and achievements that they had as a team and seeing the joy that brought to her and her teammates. And that really gave me more insight on my why. I want to do that for other kids. I want to make that possible. I want to get them involved where they have that championship experience, that ultimate accomplishment, that lifetime memory. And it really served to kind of motivate, you know, my administration of Maverick Athletics is finding more ways to make that happen for others.
Very cool. And, you know, seeing what you guys have done there, you know, 10 top 10 finishes in the Learfield Cup in the last 14 years. That means success top to bottom, right? I mean, you need to have teams scoring highly to be able to put those kind of numbers up. But what are some of the most successful programs you've had recently? I know your cross country and track programs are great, and, you know, wrestling as well. Obviously, people know about football, we'll get to. But what are some of the things that you've seen, you know, especially recently, that have really developed and blossomed there?
Well, I think when you've been someplace, you know, as long as I have, you can start to talk a little bit about your legacy and what the postmortem will be. And I guess probably, you know, one of the things that I'm most proud of is our growth on the women's side. You know, in 2002, I think talking about national championship caliber programs, you know, people wouldn't have taken you seriously when you would have mentioned that possibility for any of the Maverick women's programs. And I've been fortunate, you know, in my time here that you know, we've had three national championship programs, and they've all come on the women's side. They've, you know, in 2009 in women's basketball, 2017 in softball, and just last year with indoor track and field. And we look like we're in a place to repeat that accomplishment. Knock on wood, I'm looking forward to going out to Virginia Beach here in a couple of weeks with our track and field program. But that's probably one of the things that I'm most proud of is the growth and accomplishment on the women's side of the program. And but you mentioned sort of the accomplishment and the all sports standings and the Learfield Directors Cup. That is broad based success, and we've had equal contributions, you know, from the men's and women's side. You know, clearly what we're talking about today is men's ice hockey, and that's been one of our preeminent programs. You know, Mike Hastings has had an extraordinary level of accomplishment during his tenure with the Mavericks, the winningest program in the country over the last 7 to 8 years. You know, multiple trips, you know, where into the NCAA, a couple of years finally having that breakthrough with regional wins and some success in the postseason tournament, and now, you know, getting to, you know, continue to climb the hill. You know, two consecutive Frozen Four appearances last year, playing in the national championship game, and maybe being a period away from some outstanding hockey of standing on top of the hill as a national champion.
Yeah, definitely some success hockey. And before we get to, you know, fully immerse ourselves in that aspect of things, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about football, since I've been away from the Twin Cities for a long time, but have known that the Vikings held training camp in Mankato for 52 years up until 2017. Did that have an effect? I'm sure it had some effect on the football program, right? I mean, not just the facilities that they were probably helping upgrade, but also just, you know, having that kind of clout, I guess, on campus.
Yeah, I mean, I think it benefited us in so many ways. I mean, maintaining our facilities at a training camp standard, you know, required an investment that certainly benefited, you know, our football program. The exposure, you know, was tremendous. You know, it's an infomercial of 3 weeks, you know, highlighting Minnesota State, Mankato, and you know, every night the media signing off, and from Vikings training camp here on the campus of Minnesota State University in Mankato, Minnesota, you know, there's clearly a benefit, you know, in terms of the exposure and the public relations value that brought to it. It was a little bit of a laboratory, you know, for our coaches to be around their counterparts on the Viking staff, to get to see and observe them up close and ask questions and have that professional development opportunity. So it was it was a great relationship. We're sorry it came to an end. We certainly understand the benefit of them relocating that operation to the Twin Cities. Still maintain a great relationship with them. We've got a lot of alumni that work professionally on the staff and some that work professionally on the field.
Yep.
So it's a relationship that continues to be maintained despite them moving on to Eagan for training camp.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Coach Hastings. He's been there for half your tenure now, 10 years. What kind of relationship do you have with him? And you mentioned his success, but what has he done for your program that may not be obvious outside of the on-ice stuff?
Well, I think, Mike brings an interesting perspective to managing the bench. When you come from junior hockey, you have to wear a lot of hats, and being the coaches is the primary one and the most important one. But I think Mike brings a different set of experiences than some of our other coaches in that he had to manage the business of junior hockey as well. And I think he's got, some attentiveness to the budget and some ideas about, marketing the product and stewarding the fan base and those types of things that are maybe atypical for the coaches. And so I think what I've enjoyed is being able to get into different conversations with him and understanding the experience he's had. It's been very helpful. And I think Mike's got a big picture perspective. Not all of our conversations are about hockey. I think he appreciates the important role that hockey plays, in the overall scheme of things in terms of kind of being the lead dog of the pack in Maverick Athletics. But I think he's got an appreciation for his colleagues and is very supportive of their programs. His daughter played softball here. And so he's one of us. I mean, I think, we just got out of a coach's meeting and it's, it's not something where, that's above him, where, a lot of this is going to be focused when 90% of your program, 18 out of 20 are Division II programs. You can imagine a coach's meeting is going to have a lot of discussion about Division II topics that maybe aren't specific or germane to hockey, but there's Mike at the coaches meeting contributing to the conversation. And so, he's a great professional colleague, a mentor, a good personal friend, and somebody I really enjoy having conversation with.
It sounds like you have obviously something great going on there with the chemistry and just the, what you've been able to put on the ice, doesn't come out of nothing. You can't just have, doesn't just take talent, I'm sure. Kevin, originally the Mankato Civic Center, 1995, it opened, renovated in I think 2015, and now it's called the Mayo Clinic Health Systems Event Center. How has that facility added to the growth of this program? I'm sure it's been huge, just in general, but also the things you've been able to add to it.
Yeah, I've been through several name changes down there at that facility, and I think the Mayo name is one that will stick for a while. But it's a great relationship, and I think probably what's made it even better more recently is it's grown from a relationship to a partnership. And how can we work together and collaborate to have a mutually beneficial relationship and work together? I mean, they clearly benefit as a result of the success of our program and filling the stands. I think, one of the things, we're not the biggest facility in the country, but I think one of the things that we take a lot of pride in is being in the top 10 and operating on percentage of capacity and filling what we have for seats down there. And there's been a tremendous uptick, in fan interest and again, some things, I thought I'd never see, some of the schools that are not our traditional rival, we're filling the place. Regardless of who we're playing, we're filling the place. They're not really coming to watch. Sometimes there were times where a large crowd was dependent on the opponent. Where you're bringing in the Gophers, the Badgers, the Sioux, they're coming to watch Maverick hockey now. And I think the relationship with the facility is how can we collaborate to make it a fantastic game experience that benefits both of us, in terms of they're dependent on a large crowd for some of the revenue streams related to concessions and those types of things. They've worked together with us to market Maverick hockey and to make it a tremendous experience and the place to see and be seen in downtown Mankato on hockey weekends.
Yeah, I was there. Only game I've been to actually at your building was the night you guys honored Dryden McKay. It was a great ceremony. What was that night like for you, being able to, you know, put a Hobie Baker, a winner, up in the rafters?
You know, Dryden's just a tremendous individual, and has been very deserving all of the recognition that he's received over the course of his career and now after his career. Tremendous night, you know, to have him back and to honor him. And, you know, we couldn't be more proud of him and what he's represented, in terms of Maverick hockey, but more importantly, what he represents as a human being. Just tremendous character and integrity and very humble person. Really, really appreciated the moment. You could just see he was soaking it all in. Post-event, we wanted to be very conscientious about his time. He was on a very tight travel schedule. We asked him if he'd sign autographs, and we didn't want it to be, you know, something that would overwhelm him in terms of a time commitment. We kind of set a boundary on it of, we'll do what we can in 20 minutes and you know, we'll cut it off and get you back to your family and get you on to the next thing. And we know you've got a very early flight the next day. And, you know, it was just so emotional for him to see the line was backed up from the lobby, you know, to the ticket will call area, which stretches a couple blocks. There was no way we were going to get through it in 20 minutes. He said, I'm not turning anybody away. And that's just who Dryden McKay is.
That's a great story. And that's really awesome. I was there. I saw you guys were doing some renovations inside the kind of the innards and the team side of things. How important is it to keep, you know, those things fresh? And to obviously your great trophy room I saw in there was pretty full. But, what is it about you got to keep, you know, going forward, whether it's, you know, the stuff your their facilities or what you're doing for the student athletes?
Well, you know, you mentioned moving into that building full time, you know, about 6-7 years ago, and that was really transformational. We were practicing in an off-campus facility a couple blocks off the main campus here, and it really was not a point of pride. And being able to relocate the entire operation downtown permanently with coaches' office and a strength conditioning area, permanent locker rooms, it's just been, you know, one of the most important pieces of our success. I mean, I remember, you know, meeting with Coach Hastings in a pizza ranch in Sheldon, Iowa, and having him describe his vision before he was hired. We went through several shift changes. I had only budgeted about an hour for that meeting, and I think we ended up being there about 4 or 5 hours as Mike articulated his vision of, and we need this, and we need that, and we need that. And then those pieces fall into place, and it's all going to work. And it was about funding and resources and facilities. And, you know, I was feverishly taking notes. But, you know, really when I look back on it, he was describing the recipe for our success. And as each of those pieces fell into place, we were able to elevate the program further and further. And as you said, you know, we have got a relatively small footprint down there. When you think about what it used to be, you know, storage for staging and pipe and drape and, parking and pretty unceremonious stuff, and see what it's been transformed into in terms of a strength conditioning center, a student athlete, nutrition center and lounge area and just how far we've come and the impact that it's had on the program. We know in a small space, we've got to make a profound impact, and you only get one chance to make that first impression. And I think we've really leveraged that opportunity with the renovation of the Civic Center.
Yeah, it looks great down there. And yeah, it's packed in. Like, yeah, I got lost a couple times just because there were little nooks and crannies where you had stuff built up. So it looks really great in there. Lastly, I just want to ask you about, this season. Obviously, it's been not exactly what Mankato fans have been used to, but the Mavs still obviously have a great chance to win the McNaughton Cup again and clinch everything. But, how excited are folks in Mankato for potential McNaughton Cup being clinched again. This time it would be in the final weekend of the season against the team that's kind of you're fighting for. It's kind of a dream scenario, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, as you've mentioned, the expectations have been ratcheted up over time based on prior success and capturing regular season and postseason conference titles and then a couple Frozen Four appearances. But we lost a lot of horsepower in up front and in the back there with Dryden McKay that we discussed earlier. So, you know, there was a lot, you know, to replace, and it's taken a while for everything to fall into place. But as a lot of coaches will tell you, you know, you want to peak at the right time. It doesn't make any it doesn't have any impact on the postseason to peak in November and December. And if you want to be playing well, you want to be playing well at the end of the year. And we've had a great second half, and the team seems primed to be in a position to defend its McNaughton Cup title. And we're coming down the stretch with a great rival, in Michigan Tech, and it couldn't be scripted any better than to potentially have those two teams playing for something as meaningful as the conference championship that final weekend of the season. So we're really excited about that. Tickets are going fast. That series is virtually sold out to standing room only in advance. And we're really excited about the opportunity and hope to be hosting several rounds of the playoffs. It's a great experience. We talk about the championship experience of playing for the CCHA Cup, you know, and then that championship game, and we want to have that experience for our fans and our student athletes, and that's what's motivating us every day to you know, continue to pursue those goals.
All right, back here with Jack Kittinger, and Jack, we have some awards to talk about, including one that was just recently released here on Wednesday. It was the semifinalists for the Richter Award, Mike Richter Award, which is for the top goaltender in college hockey. The awards, the list includes a CCHA player, so we'll talk about it, but it's also, that'd be Blake Piedola, who is a semifinalist for the third time in his career. Also includes Ryan Bischel of Notre Dame, Magnus Krona of Denver, Justin Close of Minnesota, Jacob Dobesch of Ohio State, Mitchell Gibson from Harvard, Devin Levi from Northeastern, Victor Osman from Maine, and Yaniv Peretz from Quinnipiac. So that's a pretty solid list. It also includes last year's winner, Devin Levi, who's not having as good a year as he did last season as far as numbers-wise. And then you have Yaniv Peretz at Quinnipiac, who probably has some of the best numbers in the country. But I don't think Blake should be overlooked at all for being a semifinalist or the winner of this award, the way he's played this year. What do you think?
No, I think he's got to be a finalist at the very least. I would give it, because he's the one of those guys that I see the most. So that might be a little bit of a bias, but I know Devin Levi is pretty good. And I think they were talking about him helping them win the bean pots. So that, I know some of the, maybe Eastern writers maybe take that into greater consideration than we do. But I mean, I'd say probably between Piedola and Peretz, Levi, maybe Justin Close would be in there too. But I don't see why Piedola wouldn't be one of the top three guys. I mean, he's leading the country in shutouts. He's got a sub-2 goals against, 928 save percentage. His numbers are up there with probably the best guys in the country, and he's on one of the best teams in the country. So I think if it's going to be his year, I mean, this has got to be it, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's a senior, so that that has something to do with it. But yeah, you look at Peretz, Peretz kind of benefits a little bit from kind of a little bit what I think the criticisms of what McKay at Minnesota State had last year, where it's, you know, how many shots are they seeing? And I mean, McKay proved it time and time again how good he was, regardless of those things, of how many shots, you know, if you're seeing 5 to 6 shots fewer per game than other goaltenders, he made the saves, and I think that was key. And you have Peretz's numbers. His save percentage isn't quite as good as Blake. He's 926, Blake's 928. They both have 8 shutouts now. Perez is at a 1.61 goals against, whereas Blake is at 1.98. But then you have the shots on goal. Blake's seen almost 200 more shots on goal this season in the same number of games. Those are saves, excuse me, not even shots on goal. He's made almost 200 more saves than Perez, which is a significant number. And you look at Quinnipiac's record overall, 24-3-3. Blake is at 28-3. I guess it's going to come down to, right, the voters and how much they factor in, how much the goalie has to do with their team's success, right? And how much just their pure numbers have to do with their success?
Yeah, and I wonder if it's one of those things where whenever people talk about, like, MVP or whatever, and it's, like, the most valuable player to their team, if you're just, like, one guy who's on a team that is also really good and your team, but if you take that player away, maybe the team would still be pretty good.
Yeah.
Don't think that Michigan Tech would be where they are without Blake Pietilä this year just because of, I mean, I know Joe Shahan has said that. And I think just looking at the numbers and how they've been able to keep teams from scoring on them, and they haven't really scored a lot themselves, I just don't think that there's any way that they'd be sort of in the national conversation like they were now if Blake wasn't starting for them. That's just my opinion. And I think that's sort of maybe how you have to look at it, especially for a goalie award.
Right.
Like thinking about like Justin Close. Yeah, Justin Close is good, but the Gophers scored a ton of goals. I think the Gophers would still be pretty good no matter who was in the net. Whereas with Blake, that's not necessarily a given with Michigan Tech. And like that's not to take away how good Michigan Tech has been, but I think he's the biggest part of that success on the ice.
Absolutely. And just looking at the numbers here from my point of view, I think there's only two clear semifinalists. Finalists. If there's, out of three, you got Perez, you have Blake, and I guess the third would be Levi, who's got a little bit better save percentage, but he's given up 2.32 goals against. He's made a lot of saves too. He's up in Blake's range as far as saves made. So, I mean that might be your three. I think that's maybe the clear three.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to come down to, and Levi being a past winner. I'm not sure what that. He was a sophomore, like a junior this year. Levi is so. Who knows what goes into the voting, the thoughts of those voters, but I think it's going to be very tight all the way through. And I think if Blake can help win the McNaughton, who knows what that does for his chances at this award.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you about that.
Our other awards that CCHA players are in the running for, they haven't narrowed down the Hobey Baker yet, but you have to imagine Blake is in that conversation as well. As far as goalies go, he was in that top 10 last year as well. But also Austin Swankler, who reached 40 points this year. Only six players in the country have 40 points. Adam Fantilli, the great freshman for Michigan, has 47. Sean Farrell at Harvard is 42. Colin Graff for Quinnipiac is 41. And then you have Swankler, McAllister, Snuggerud. Those are big time names to be grouped in with. Swankler has 17 goals out of that group, along with Graff and Snuggerud. Fantilli has 18 goals, and then you have Jason Poland, the only senior who's really in the running for Hobey as far as skaters go, unless you include Aiden McDonough from Northeastern, who's down at 34 points. But the Hobey's proven to not be the award for the person who scores the most, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times it has a lot to do with it, but they look at a lot more things, and that's a lot of the reason why Dryden was able to win the award last year at Minnesota State.
Yeah, well, there's also, I remember Ryan Donato a couple years ago with Harvard. I know that was sort of a one because he didn't have the most goals or points, but people forgot that you look at character too, and people liked his character, so that was one of the reasons he won. So I think, and I know I was a voter that year. I know. So there's some years where it's obvious, where when you have like Jack Eichel, I know that was an obvious one for everybody when we were doing that voting when I was on the committee. In some years where it's not so obvious. And I think this one maybe is not so obvious just because, like you said, the person that scores most doesn't always win. And it's not like, you've got so many guys here that have scored, that have got 40 plus points.
Yeah.
And there's nobody that's like, oh, that guy is going to win. Regarding Swankler, I think he's one guy, I almost sometimes forget about him just because he's under the radar. He's a sophomore, plays for Bowling Green, and BG hasn't had the strongest of seasons. So he's kind of a guy that, I forgot that he had 40 points until we were talking about it earlier today. And maybe that's just, maybe that's just the way he goes about his business too. Just he's not flashy and, is a team oriented guy. That could be it as well. But I think he definitely deserves to be up there if you're just going on scoring. And he's had a great story too, just playing major junior and being able to come to college. Despite that, due to some, I think there were some clerical issues or something that he got an opportunity to come to college. And I think that's a good thing that he was able to get that second chance and play in college. And seems like he's enjoying himself.
Yeah, it's a positive for that turning the situation into a positive for him and for the school. And you also look at defensemen who maybe don't put up the points like a Jackson McCollum from Minnesota, who does have 27 points in the blue line, which is pretty impressive in its own right. But yeah, I think you can get a little bit caught up in the scoring aspect of things as far as these awards go and how much the committee looks at other pieces of the puzzle as far as the student athlete makeup is concerned. And so I think, it's going to be interesting. You mentioned how kind of wide open it is. I think it actually is very wide open. They tend to give it to upperclassmen more often, I have to imagine. You talked about, what's his name from BU, Asad, who was just a freshman there. But I think that happens in very, very specific situations. So, any final thoughts on Hobie before we switch subjects here?
Yeah, and I also realized I was talking about Jimmy VC, not Ryan Donato. I don't know why I'm thinking Ryan Donato. It was Jimmy.
another Harvard player. You weren't wrong in the school.
No, he was the Harvard guy I was thinking of just before you get emailed.
No, Jimmy VC. Yeah. I'm not sure how many East Coast hockey fans listen to this, but if they do, welcome.
VC instead of Ryan Donato in there. I don't want to make you do all that editing, but
no, it's good. No, we don't have to do anything about that.
Mostly just thinking about the Hobie is just, it's also kind of a weird award too, because it doesn't take into account postseason.
Right.
They vote for that either right before the regionals or right in between like the regional and the frozen. I remember when it happens, but yeah. That's also something to take into account too. So just because your team goes and wins the national championship, that doesn't mean, well, I guess they offer it before the national title game, but I think that's another thing that people tend to forget is like they vote on it, a month or so before it comes out. So it doesn't necessarily take into account the entire season. So this is one caveat there. I think that's important for people to remember. So for example, if Blake shuts out every single game from here on out, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to win because they might not vote on it until after that's happened or before that's happened, I guess.
Right. Right.
So yeah, I think we have a pretty good shot of having two CCHA players being a top 10 finalist or semifinalist once again, which is always a good thing for the league in general.
Absolutely. Switching gears a little bit to the Mcnaughton Cup run here. We have two teams who can still win it. Michigan Tech currently leads Minnesota State by 2 points, 47-45, but we talked about it earlier, Minnesota State two games in hand. They are at Bemidji State this weekend for a huge series for a number of reasons, with the Beavers fighting for home ice and Minnesota State trying to establish a lead in the McNaughton chase with just those two games of Michigan Tech in the final weekend of the year up ahead. So you talk about giant weekends for both of those teams for slightly different reasons, but there's plenty to play for, Jack, here for those two teams.
Yeah, you know, I went back and looked when I was writing my column. I was curious just to see how often – I didn't actually include all of this in the column just because it got to be too unwieldy, but how often every year since, like, the new WCHA mm-hmm. or basically the same team, so CCHA, old WCHA – or old new WCHA, I guess.
Yes.
There's only been, like, 2 years, I think, maybe two seasons. I'm not really counting the COVID one because that was weird.
Yeah.
Where the season didn't go down to, like, the basically the final 2 weeks of the season. And that was 2017 when the Beavers won it, and they were, like, wire-to-wire on top, which I think was kind of weird. And they didn't make the NCAA tournament that year, which is also kind of an anomaly. Usually the McNaughton Cup winner will historically make the tournaments.
Right.
And I think the other one was 2018-2019, and Minnesota State clinched by early February and won the league by 12 points. So and then the COVID year, which I think is weird. So I'm not really counting that one. But so yeah, historically, it's going to come down to the wire. And also historically, I was doing this research. Almost every single time the Mavericks or the Beavers won, they've been playing each other in either the last weekend of the season or the second to last weekend of the season. So the Beavers, especially this past 5 years, have either helped or denied Minnesota State winning
times. Interesting.
That's an interesting little stat. So I guess that all that is to say is, like, historically this series is a pretty big one in deciding the Mountain Cup, and that's it's not going to decide it this weekend, but the Beavers will have a say in whether the Mavericks are leading Michigan Tech going to the final week or not.
Yeah.
And obviously they want to win for their own purposes too, because they want home ice. I'm sure that just looking at the matchups, probably most likely matchup would be a Ferris, whether they're at home or on the road. And if I were Tom Cerutori, I would not want to play in Bear Rapids just because that rink is not the most fun to predict. And I know I think that's going to be a big one for both teams, and mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a pretty intense series. I just a fun fact, one of those games that I was looking back that I think the year that Minnesota State and Michigan Tech shared the McNaughton, they also played Bemidji on the last week. In the last game of the season, they played Bemidji State. The Beavers, on the Saturday night, they upset Minnesota State 1-0 in Mankato. Just a very, very Tom Cerutori style, get a lead and protect it and protect the puck. And that left the door open for Tech, who swept Northern Michigan that week and claimed to share the title. So I think these sorts of games are very familiar to both programs. So I just think that's a little fun fact there for you.
No, it is.
Beavers have experience playing spoiler. And I mean, Minnesota State has some experience with that too, but I think that'll be a fun one in Bemidji.
Absolutely. Other series that weekend, Northern Michigan, who still has a chance, although a little more outside after splitting, they're hosting Ferris State for two. And then you have Lake Superior State and St. Thomas. And the only thing that can really come out of this weekend for those teams is being eliminated from home ice if they aren't able to pick up a lot of points, that being St. Thomas. Obviously, the only team currently out of the running for home ice is Lake Superior State. They can finish seventh or eighth. St. Thomas can finish anywhere from fourth to eighth, and Northern can finish fourth to eighth. Ferris can finish still as high as second on technicality, just because they have potentially an odd tiebreaker over Minnesota State, but that would include very odd things happening, including both of those teams either winning out or losing out, respectively, in regulation. And then Ferris State would have to flip the goal differential to win that tiebreaker. So I'm not saying it's going to happen at all, but that's why Minnesota State hasn't clinched home ice yet, is because of that tiebreaker. So that's kind of a funny one. So 1 point gained or lost by gained by Minnesota State, lost by Ferris State the rest of the way, and Minnesota State will clinch home ice. But yeah, getting back to that series that we spent a little bit on, that Minnesota State, the Midget series, you have to think that that Tech almost, not necessarily needs, but almost needs a Bemidji win in that series. Because if they go into the final weekend of the year down by, you know, trailing by 4 points, it's going to be awful difficult to try and swing that the other way. Now, if it's a 2 point difference going in, that's a different story.
Yeah, and I didn't do all the math for this, but hypothetically, if they were down four,
yep,
and then they, I guess if they got 4 points and tied, would what? I mean, they would share the McNaughton, but
yes,
who would get the number one seed in that point, or would it depend on, like, who's got the tiebreaker? I guess I didn't do that math.
Well, you kind of caught me there, because neither did I, but. It would most likely go to the first tiebreaker, which would be a regulation wins. I know Tech has two more. Well, they already have two more of those now, so it would probably be Michigan Tech on that tiebreaker of wins in regulation in the league. Because right now Tech is sitting on 14, and Minnesota State has 12.
Okay.
So obviously Minnesota State could pick up regulation wins this weekend. It's really too hard to tell, and probably not worth racking your brain over until after this weekend is over. Then it becomes a lot more clear as to what the tiebreakers are, as far as head to head, and then second tiebreakers and on down the line. So that's a really good question, but I think we'll let the weekend play out here and see. The keys here are clinching home ice, which is going to obviously come down to the end with just 1 point separating Bemidji State and Ferris State right now in the 4-5, and then whether Northern or St. Thomas can threaten those two. If they can pick up, if either of those teams can pick up a sweep this weekend, then they have a legitimate shot in the final weekend of trying to jump into that four spot. But it's going to be tough. As I mentioned, Northern Michigan's 7 points back and St. Thomas is 8 back, so you're going to need definitely to sweep for those two teams, and then obviously needing help from teams above them to drop down. So that's kind of the McNaughton picture. Anything else you want to add before we wrap things up with one more topic here?
No, I think just like we've said, the possibilities are kind of crazy, but it's usually how these things tend to go. So I've become used to it a little bit. And I'm sure other leagues are like this, but it's just, if for some reason, it just feels like these teams in CCHA are so competitive with each other that even in years where Minnesota State is historically good, they have never necessarily run away with the title. Maybe there's one year where they ran away with it, but
yeah,
I think that says a lot about the teams in the league and just how competitive they are with each other. And just, there's no real, obviously Lake State is not playing very well this year, but even them, I don't think anyone wants to play them. There's no clear, like, cellar dweller that people are like, oh yeah, we want to play them, like maybe there are in some other leagues.
Absolutely, that's definitely the case. And just finally, just a rebranding a little bit of the CCHA championships, the Mason Cup playoffs, refer to really just everything all encompassing, including the quarterfinals, the best of three series, which gets underway March 3rd. But then the semifinals and final, which are single games, are being rebranded as CCHA championship. That includes both of those semifinals and the final. Just a little bit of change there, trying to bring some more significance to those games. Everything's played all the way out of the championship on on campus of the higher seed. And so that becomes important, not just winning the McNaughton, but a chance for Michigan Tech or Minnesota State to have that home ice the rest of the way in the playoffs is big. So, Jack, any thoughts on that? And I know we saw some pretty exciting games, obviously some controversy at the end of last season. But all that aside and things being cleaned up, as is the hope, what are your thoughts on a playoffs situation here?
Well, I think that whoever gets home ice for the entire playoffs, I think is going to have a big advantage. Although Michigan Tech seems like, I think if I were Minnesota State, I would really want that home ice, just because going to Houghton and playing against Michigan Tech in a playoff atmosphere, I think is probably the personal hell of most of the other coaches in the CCHA. Just how difficult it is to play there normally. Minnesota State has struggled at home this year, so maybe some of the other teams wouldn't mind that. But I think Michigan Tech being at home, they have such a nice home field or home ice advantage there that they've had for a long time, even when they're not very good, that I think having them have home ice would be very difficult for other teams. Obviously, you never know what's going to happen, especially in like a one game deal. But Michigan Tech being at home, those games are fun to watch just because I like watching the Misfits and all of it that happens there. Obviously, in Mankato, I would probably be able to go to those games, so that would also be fun. And they have a nice home ground, home field advantage too, but I don't know. I just feel like there's something about playing at Michigan Tech, having home ice, that would be really daunting to most teams in the conference, especially in the playoffs. I don't know. I genuinely don't know who's going to win the McNaughton Cup, though, which is a nice thing to have. Next week, I think it's going to be really fun, because I think either team could win, and it could happen in multiple different ways. I don't think there's any sort of like, oh, they're going to get blown out, or one team is going to blow out another team. I think they're both going to be two really good games, and that's really all you want.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the CCHA Show. For stories, scores, stats, and more, visit ccha.com.